This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 3rd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 306, and happy Labor Day. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature, sports psychologist Dr. Saul Miller, author of Winning Golf, The Mental Game, advice to improve life on and off the golf course. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The great Jack Nicklaus said that golf is 90% mental and 10% physical. Dr. Saul Miller agrees. The North Vancouver sports psychologist is the author of the new book, Winning Golf, The Mental Game, from ECW Press. It's a book about creating the focus, feeling, and confidence to play consistently well and to improve the quality of life, even away from the fairways and the greens. Miller has counseled teams and players from the NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA, and CFL, plus Olympians and national team athletes in more than a dozen sports, and pro golfers, too. I sat down with Saul Miller at his North Vancouver house to talk about winning golf.
I've been doing this sports psychology, performance psychology stuff for over four decades, and this is my ninth book, Winning Golf, and I think with time, you begin to distill down the essence. It gets simpler in a way to define what really is critically important to help people perform at their best. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because somebody in California, right after the book came out, somebody wrote a piece, an article about the book where they said, this is, you know, a book about golf, but it's also a book about life. And because golf is such a mental game, learning to manage your emotions, learning to manage your thought process, that applies to everything in life. So if you work on these techniques that I describe, which is right focus, right feeling, and right attitude, if you work on that to really improve your golf game, it translates into everything in life.
Yeah, my brother, who's the golfer in the family and made money being a caddy at Capilano years ago, has some wisdom that golf is a game where everyone goes the same distance, but you're rewarded if you do less work. And by doing less work, you've got to do the work better.
It's about, certainly it's about efficiency. It's about using your energy very well. I mean, one of the big things, I say right focus, right feeling, right attitude. When I deal with right feeling, I work a lot with breathing. And I have a breathing process I describe in detail called conscious breathing, where first you get a nice smooth breathing rhythm. Then you feel yourself drawing energy to you. And the third thing is feeling that energy flowing through you. Energy through your arms, through your legs, up into your head. Energy flowing right into the club. The ball has no energy of its own. It gets its energy from you. So if the energy is flowing smoothly through you, if you have a clear mental picture of what you want to do, you see the target, you see the shot shape, and so on, clear picture, smooth swing, you increase the probability of the ball going where you want it to go. The problem is, it's an issue of love and fear. When people love the process, they're feeling good, there's a smooth flow, ball goes where they want. When they're thinking anything negative, don't miss, they create tension, they interrupt the smooth flow, the probability of the ball going where they want diminishes. I'm always saying the ball has no energy of its own, it gets it from you. So you want to know, I can play this game, see the shot you want to make, create that smooth feeling, the ball will go where it wants. And there are techniques to do that. Visualization techniques, self-talk affirmation techniques, and breathing techniques. And you work with these things over time, ball goes where you want it to go.
Now, golf, especially when you're talking about breathing, it's a game that's played in a green, serene environment where it's conducive to breathing. It's conducive to reflection, to taking a step back, because there isn't the clock. You're not, the athletes aren't dealing with the pressure of the clock.
It's certainly, you're right, it's beautiful outdoors, it's conducive to breathing. However, it is a game of precision. And so the breathing becomes even more important because you have to be very precise. In the book, I have a chapter I call Transferring Skills. And I talk about five athletes, three NHL players, two NFL players, who I worked with for several seasons, not just once or twice. And they've all become good recreational golfers. And I ask them, how did the work we do to improve your hockey or to improve your football translate to the golf course? And they absolutely say it did. And one of them was Cliff Ronning. And Cliff, who's become a very good golfer, and Cliff said, it's easier to play hockey than golf, because in hockey, if you get pissed off, you can go cross-check somebody. In golf, you really have to manage the emotions. You have to stay, you can't have a bad shot and let it affect the next one. So the breathing, whereas it's more conducive, you're outdoors and in the green environment, still the precision of the sport. There's only one sport I work with that I think demands even more precision, and that is I work with Olympic shooters who have to be incredibly precise. I mean, they're shooting 60 rounds at a target that's the size of a silver dollar, and they'll shoot 60 tens, you know. I mean, so those guys, too, really work with breathing to stay in the zone. If they shoot a 9, they can't allow that to affect the next shot. And it's the same in golf. So many of the people, Nancy Lopez, who I used to work with, she said, you know, if you make a bad shot, take a breath. She said, when I was playing, I could see if the shot affected the next person. I knew I could beat her because I saw in her body language that that was affecting her. So we have to, you know, that's the shot. Take a breath, recreate that good feeling and the good focus.
Another difference of golf, although it shares it with tennis, for instance, mm-hmm. Singles tennis, is it's a solitary game where it's on the shoulder of the athlete. The athlete doesn't have, I mean, as you say, they don't have an opponent to take their emotions out against. They also don't have teammates who can help rescue them, who can assist if they've made a mistake. Who the athlete can assist the other teammates to excel. They're not surrounded by people on the field of play who can help. They're solitary. It's on their shoulders. And I remember talking to Dick Sokol, Dave Barr, and they told me that's why they enjoy golf so much. It's them and them only. They don't have to rely on or be frustrated by a teammate. It's them and them alone. It's on their shoulders. It's their responsibility.
Two-sided. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they make a mistake, it's on them as well. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it absolutely. It's just me out there. I'm competing really against myself. And one of the NFL players I work with, Leroy Irvin, used to be a cornerback for the Los Angeles Rams. He just said, you know, when he was playing cornerback, which is one of the toughest positions in football, you've got to guard the run, you've got to cover some of the fastest guys in the game, you know, for the deep pass. And he said, I could survive because I knew I was better than them. I could beat them. But he said, when I'm playing golf, I'm playing against this course. He's really saying I'm playing against myself. And so I have to really keep in a good space. I have to have a good focus. I spend a fair bit of time on positive self-talk, and we spend a lot of time on imagery. And one of the things I mentioned there, and I do it across sports, Bob, and that is I ask my clients to pick an animal that gives them the feelings they'd want to have if they're playing great. And with elite athletes, not kids, kids can be very creative in different directions, but with elite athletes, 99% are picking predators. And I asked them, what's the difference between the golfer who's the predator and the golfer who's the prey? And the golfer who's a predator steps up to make the shot. He's off the tee. He sees where he's going to hit it. He's on the green. This is going in the hole. He's executing what he's after. The prey doesn't want to make a mistake. The prey is playing careful. The prey is playing with tension. And it's very interesting. I mean, I described a case there where one of the guys was a Korn Ferry golfer, a professional golfer on the Korn Ferry Tour. And he was struggling. And I asked him, pick an animal, and he came up with a Labrador Retriever, an old Labrador Retriever. And I said, well, it's an unusual choice. It's a comfortable dog. But if you want to play more assertively, change your animal. And he did. He changed it to a lion. And he said it gave him more of a sense of presence on the course. I'd say walk like a lion. Draw in the power. And it's not by chance that the best golfer in the world, maybe ever, was Tiger Woods. Or Glenn Norman was the shark. Or Greg Norman. Or Nicholas was the golden bear. I mean, these guys have images of assertive animals that can really make things happen.
Golfers now are surrounded by a support team, whether it's a sports psychologist, a nutritionist, strength and conditioning coach. They've also got the business manager. I mean, years and years ago, it was really just one man or one woman on tour, maybe even with a family member or acting as caddy. That was it. But now, with the money there, they've become almost their own corporations.
You have your sports psychologist, you have your swing coach, you have your family, you know, you have your fitness trainers and so on. And absolutely, it's a corporation, it is a team. And a lot of them, you have your caddy, a lot of them acknowledge that these are key factors in their success. But it really comes down to, as you said, it's an individual sport. The pressure is on me to perform. And what can I do to be at my best? And I'm saying you have to create the right focus, the right feeling, and the right attitude. And there's a great, I would say there's probably a disproportional emphasis on the mechanics of the sport. Everybody's focused on swing a little faster, a little slower. And one of the great quotes is Scotty Scheffler came up with recently. He said, when I'm playing my best, I'm focused on my target and the shot shape. I'm not thinking about swing mechanics. I'm not thinking about anything other than a good rhythm and a smooth feeling where the shot is going. It's creating the good feeling. It's having the clear focus. When fear creeps into that, don't miss, don't screw up, don't hit it in the bunker, it creates tension. It interferes with the flow. So it's a love and fear thing, and it's training people how to change that tense moment, the tense thought, how to release the tension, breathe in energy, put in the positive image, recreate the good feeling. And I think there are techniques to do it. But it takes work. It absolutely takes work. We all know if we go to the gym and we lift weights, we get stronger. So I say it's the same thing. This book describes a series of exercises. It's not just understanding them. I know if I go to the gym and lift, I get stronger. I don't go to the gym. So it's about doing the exercise daily, regularly. And if I do it after a few weeks, then what starts to happen is I have enough habit strength that under pressure, I can take a breath and refocus and create the good feeling. And then my consistency goes up. My efficiency, as we were saying before, improves.
On that note, golfers have to spend a lot of time, hours and hours, days and days at the driving range and on the putting green to perfect the two key techniques. And within that is also, you know, the repetition, but also a chance for them to test out the methods that are contained in the book and methods that you would counsel them on.
And if you went to the gym twice to lift, it wouldn't change very much. But if you're going 4 or 5 times a week, after several weeks, you begin to notice the difference. And a lot of these exercises, you don't have to practice this on the range. The breathing exercise that I'm describing in here This is something you do at home. The self-talk, you know, you can look in the mirror, make eye contact and say, I'm a good golfer. Define your strength as a golfer. I mean, whether it's, you know, with the breathing, Tom Watson said, when I learn to breathe, I learn to win. Curtis Strange said, under pressure, the most important thing to remember is to breathe. And then when it comes to positive thoughts about self, Gary Player, I'm trying to think, Johnny Miller, these guys talked about how, as kids, they kept saying positive things to themselves, positive things. And eventually it becomes, we get more of what we think about. It's training ourselves to think in a certain way. If I'm on the green, I'm thinking, this is going in the hole. Of course, I have to have a good stroke technique, but it's believing, it's not thinking, don't miss. It's thinking, this is going in the hole. It's seeing the shot rolling toward the cup dropping in, creating the thought, the image, and then the feeling that goes with it. And it takes training.
What do you advise golfers as they're getting closer to the end, as the crowds are getting bigger, and the potential for the distraction of whether it's one person sneezing or someone's cell phone goes off, or someone you know, shouts something that gets them off their game? How to stay in the moment?
Well, I think with pressure, I mean, there are two elements there. One is the pressure and one is the distraction. And with pressure, I would say people tend to do under pressure what they've previously done under pressure. So somebody who tends to be tense under pressure will probably do it again unless they overtrain themselves away from the pressure and build up enough habit strength so that under pressure, they take a breath and they have more control. When I work with breathing, one of the things I work with is just the rhythm of the breath. And I say the breath is like waves in the ocean. And the waves can help you to stay more calm and strong. So if I've spent hours doing this, eventually, it's like a meditation, Bob. I'm less affected by what's out there. And as for distraction, it's kind of similar in a way. I have a technique I call the release reflex, which is like, if I notice I'm tense, I notice I'm focused on what's around me. When I notice that, I work at releasing tension, breathing in, drawing the energy back to me, and then putting in a positive thought. I can handle it. The release reflex is release the tension, draw the energy to you, put in a positive thought. And it becomes, again, it's like a practiced habit. And people who are less affected, I work with a lot of situations. If we think of hockey, completely different thing. I work with every year three, four young guys who get invited to NHL camps. And they walk into the camp and they look like, wow, he's big and he's fast and he's a first round pick. And as soon as they do this, they're giving their power away. And I say it's human nature to do it, but when you notice that, breathe in, bring the power back to you, put in the positive thought, I can handle this. Why are you there? I'm a good player. So it's training yourself to do these things, and the more reps you do, the more it's there for you under pressure. Mm-hmm. Somebody coughs, somebody yells out something, this thing recently where they yelled out when Homa was putting, they were yelling, don't miss the putt. Some guy had a bet up in this crowd. If you notice it, draw the energy back to you, use it as a stimulus to reset, see the shot going in. Use it. If you don't use it, it can use you. But you have to have a tool in how to use it. And I've been doing this a long time, and there are definitely tools that work. But the focus is much more in all sports, including golf, on the mechanics of the game and physical fitness. They're important, but we often neglect the mental side of it.
And do you ever go out in the links with any of your clients?
It's very much away from the course. I tend to blow my cover completely when I go on the course with them. I mean, if I was watching them, it's one thing. But I remember when I was working with the golf team at Mississippi State, and after a number of sessions, the boys said, come on out in the course with us, Dr. Miller. So I said, sure. Well, when I was spraying them this way and spraying them that way, they began to shake their heads like, this is a guy we're listening to. So my expertise is in creating the focus, helping them to create the focus, the feeling, and the attitude to play great. And so we do that away from the course. It is helpful to watch. I remember I used to work with Jimmy Nelford, and this was after he had had a terrible accident and was trying to come back. He almost lost his arm in a motorboat accident. And I could watch. You could see at times when, or walking the course with Nancy Lopez, you could see at times when a golfer would tense up a little bit or what have you. So it is helpful to observe. But what I'm teaching away.
Mm-hmm. And for the professional golfers these days, the distractions have extended beyond the golf course, business-wise. You've got what's going on with the Saudis, with the LIV Golf Tour and the PGA, the dispute there being resolved. Some people say it's resolved in favor of the Saudis, which ignited even more discourse about that. So you've got the way professional golf is structured, which has caused a distraction to some of the top golfers. Then you have the business side of golf. You know, they have the opportunities to make money beyond the tournaments. And of course, those who aren't always performing and excelling in the tournaments might want to find other ways to make money through endorsements or mm-hmm. or you know, exhibition events. And then, of course, there's gambling, which some golfers have been embroiled in controversies there, especially with the way the gambling industry in North America has just exploded with deregulation in the last couple or 3 years. How do you advise golfers approaching this new era of golf? It's not just the golf course and you know, and trying to win a tournament anymore. It's so much more.
Well, again, I think maybe that's a reason to invest more of your time and energy, creative energy, in working on managing the focus, emotions, and everything else, because people are extremely creative about how they can distract themselves, and there's many opportunities to distract yourself. So I quite agree. I mean, it's gotten more and more complex, not just for this sport, but just about every sport. You're surrounded, you know, by all kinds of things to distract yourself. Unless, you know, somebody asked me recently, what's the difference working with elite professionals and amateurs? And I said, well, one of the things about professionals is, for the most part, they have a discipline. They have a commitment and a discipline. But nevertheless, there are a multitude of distractions, and you have to have your priorities, and you have to have your support team to help you. I know Max Homa talked a lot about gratitude. He said, you know, several times, whenever I have, you know, I start getting frustrated, I'll think about three things I'm grateful for. And one of the interviewers asked him, well, how frequently does that happen? And he said, oh, 6-7 times a day, I'm running on how grateful I am about doing the things I enjoy doing. So it is a perspective. It is a discipline, and it is having some techniques. But you're right, it's one can easily get lost in the what surrounds the game in all these sports.
Even though golf is a solitary game, there are opportunities sometimes when there is opportunity for team play, like the Ryder Cup, for instance, mm-hmm. President's Cup. The golfers that you've advised, did they ever talk about the opportunity to play in that kind of forum and what that means to them to take a break from what golf normally is to be in a team?
I haven't heard a lot about it. I've heard two things. One is that they enjoy representing their country. I mean, it pumps them up. They really enjoy being selected, and they enjoy the opportunity to represent the country. And the other thing is they enjoy the camaraderie of playing with these guys. So it's a new kind of pressure, and it's kind of fun. That's all I've heard about it. You know, I haven't really talked with somebody in depth about their experience. The only things I've heard is it's something they really look forward to. It's a different experience, but they're representing the country, which is good. And the flip side is they're playing with these guys they usually compete with, and that's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's, as you mentioned earlier, the team thing is absent. You have your team, but, you know, it's here you're playing with a whole bunch of guys you usually compete with, you have a lot of respect for. And it's fun to be with them. It's fun to compete against those guys from Europe and so on. So I think it, what I've heard is it's positive.
What about the role of the caddy? That is the only other person, really, who can be relied upon at the moment during a tournament for that support, advice, for the support, for the sober second thought. They compare notes on where they think the ball should go and which is the best route to get the ball to where they want to put it, but also someone there that can give a few words of positive reinforcement.
I mean, I've heard again and again the tremendous respect they have for their caddies. And the caddies are invested. I mean, in the pro level, they're getting, I don't know if it's 10% or whatever of the winnings, but absolutely, it's somebody walking with you that you trust, and that's there for you. They're entirely to serve you. So a number of people, I think are in the book, there's a few of the female golfers particularly who've expressed how important the caddy is for their game. Yeah, I won, but I wouldn't have done it without him. That kind of thing. That's huge. Yeah. It's not like you're taking your dad out with you. I mean, maybe you are when you're in high school or something. These guys, caddies are pros in a different way.
You need a caddy who is a technician, basically. If there's some out there that have either taken the schooling or gone to get their diploma, that would give a golfer just an unbelievable edge to have someone who can be not only the technician of golf that they need to be, who knows the surroundings and the course, but someone who can get into the mind
absolutely.
Of the golfer.
You know, it's very interesting. I hadn't thought of that. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's not just it's being able to read your player and understanding how you could communicate something, not just saying do this, it's reminding them to breathe. And sometimes you don't have to say breathe, you just have to look at them and take a breath, and they get that message, and you can sense where they're at, and you the way you frame what you say to them, you can say it in a positive way. So often somebody says try, the word try creeps into it, and try is loaded with tension. You know, I love the saying that Nike has, this it's one of the great sayings in sport, is just do it. But how we communicate, so you're right. I mean, if a caddy really took the Winning Golf, the Mental Game course, they read the book, and it might help them to improve the communication, their ability to read their golfer and communicate more effectively, for sure. Good thought. Fundamentally, it's love and fear. And part of love is loving yourself. And I really believe if you're feeling good about yourself and your game, you're going to perform better. Loving yourself, the easiest way to love yourself is take a breath. And then it's saying something positive to yourself. I can handle this, or stay smooth, and see the shot, and so on. So that feeling of love, the question becomes, how do I transfer angst, doubt, into the good feeling? And that's what we talk a lot about in the book, changing fear into love. Love is power. And I think, you know, down the road, I may have to do a book on the different, on just about love and fear. Because it's about everything. As I said, I think at the outset, when the book first came out and I was in California, they did an article on how this is a book about golf, but it translates to everything we do in life. And that's the wonderful thing about this game. It really is. It's a game of life. It's me playing this game against the golf course. And me managing my thinking and managing my feelings and creating the mental picture and doing what I plan to do. Thank you. Thanks for the interview.
That was Dr. Saul Miller, sports psychologist and author of the book Winning Golf, The Mental Game, from ECW Press. His website is saulmiller.com. That's S-A-U-L, Miller with an E.com. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Anchor.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, three Canadian naval ships patrol Taiwan Strait. Halifax-class frigates HMCS Ottawa and HMCS Vancouver and the supply ship Asterix departed the west coast of Canada in mid-August and arrived at Japan's Yokosuka port on August 28th. They will conduct joint exercises with the U.S., Japan, South Korea, Australia, and New Zealand. The Ottawa will reportedly be tasked with patrolling the waters off Southeast Asia, while the Vancouver will focus on security in Northeast Asia. In the Kyoto news, Japan PM eats Fukushima seafood with ministers to dispel concerns. The lunch meeting was apparently aimed at dispelling concerns about the possible negative impact of the discharged water on human health and the reputational damage to fishery products from the areas around the northeastern Japan prefecture. Following the gathering at the Prime Minister's office, Economy, Trade, and Industry Minister Yasutoshi Nishimura, responsible for nuclear policy, said that Kishida ate sashimi consisting of sea bass, flounder, and octopus, alongside rice that was harvested in Fukushima. In the Hong Kong Free Press, U.S. photography professor, who covered 2019 protests, says Hong Kong denied him entry, suspects he is on a list. Photojournalist Matthew Connors told Hong Kong Free Press that he arrived from Bangkok on August 16th and informed immigration officers that he was a professor and artist who was visiting for the sole purpose of tourism, but the officials said he did not satisfy requirements for entry. Connors said the city's unwillingness to admit potential critics was a, quote, real sign of fragility. From the outside, it certainly feels like Hong Kong has become a frontier of a new Cold War. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregon Ethics Commission investigates Shemaya Fagan's spending on hotels, plane trips, rental cars as Secretary of State. The commission voted 7-0 to delve into whether Fagan used her public office for her personal gain or the personal gain of a relative or household member. An Oregonian investigation in June found tens of thousands of dollars in questionable spending and possible double dipping by Fagan while she was the state's second in command, between January 2021 until her resignation in May 2023. In the Seattle Times, fentanyl gets into Washington in any manner you can think of. Court records from cases in Kent, Spanaway, and Marysville demonstrate how a sophisticated network of international drug trafficking organization operatives manufacture, transport, and distribute fentanyl in Washington. In one case, a package labeled furniture parts, but contained dyes for use in pill presses, went from China to Marysville. Investigators also found finished M30 pills packaged in large brick-shaped bundles that they believe were manufactured in Mexico and then smuggled into the U.S. In the Times columnist, man arrested in connection with four arson fires in Victoria and Saanich. Edwin Singh, 42, is charged with setting three fires on Government Street in June and July and another in Saanich in August. Fires were set at a loading dock, loading zone, car rental business, and auto dealership. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all the folks seeking a cure for Parkinson's disease and those who are helping improve the lives of people living with Parkinson's. The annual Parkinson Super Walk is happening around BC on September 9th and 10th. Go to parkinson.ca to find out how you can walk and where you can walk and how you can donate. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
These rich men know the rich men. Wanna know what you do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, cause the rich men, north of rich men.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 3rd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 3rd of September in 2016, the U.S. and China, the world's biggest carbon emitters, ratified the Paris Climate Agreement? Meanwhile, we're in 2023 and China is approving new coal plants at the rate of about 2 per week. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. I emphasize this because, well, you can't see us on Facebook if you're logging in from Canada. And if you're unhappy with Bill C-18 and the Liberals' policies with regard to social media, write a letter to the Prime Minister. It won't cost you anything. But for news as it happens, you can also visit The Breaker News on Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Happy Labor Day. Until next week.